Welcome back to Cocktails and Classics. I'm Dylan. Joining me are Ben and Cam. We're back again. This time we're doing some Christmas movies, and we're starting with Home Alone, the 1990 holiday comedy thriller? Question mark?
Thriller. Crime drama?
Noir?
Noir. It's a stoner comedy, actually.
And to kick things off and get everybody in the right mood, we're going to go to this week's cocktail, one that Ben found. It's the South Bend Shovel Slayer, named after the mysterious neighbor character who you later find out is not a serial killer that we know. It is 1 ounce of orange vodka, 1.5 ounces of cranberry juice, served over ice, and you top with soda water, garnish it with an orange twist. Ben's wife gave huge compliments to the bartender on the drink, I heard.
Yeah, I let her try it. I let her try mine.
Let her try it? Wow. How progressive of you to let a woman try your drink.
Well, I mean, I let her try from my glass. You know, and you got to be careful who you share a glass with nowadays, man. COVID is everywhere.
Your wife? Man. You guys, I've heard some stuff, but you guys are real strict over there. Wow.
No, so she did the thing where I hand her the glass, she takes a sip, and then I go to take the glass back, and she just kind of doesn't want to give the glass back. So yeah, that's how you know it's good, when someone's like, okay, go make your own, and I'll keep this one. I recommend it. I'll be honest, it doesn't feel wintry by any means. It feels very much like a summery drink. It's nice and citrusy. Very much a poolside cocktail versus a fireside cocktail. See what I did there?
Yeah.
Yeah, I would definitely, this would definitely be like a go-to summer drink I would make by like the pitcher.
Ben's the 90-year-old man drinking cranberry juice by the pool. Damn, kids!
You'll never also take my cranberry
make sure
juice.
It's cranberry juice, not cranberry juice cocktail. Too much sugar. Gotta cut that sugar down. Keep it real cranberry juice.
Wow, Ben is definitely the 90-year-old man. Check the show notes below. Make yourself a South Bend Shovel Slayer. And hit up the Drizzly and Casker links to get some vodka, orange-flavored vodka, delivered directly to your door. And check out Home Alone. It's on Disney Plus right now, or literally almost every waking moment. It's on YouTube TV, some channel. So if you have cable, get in there and watch an hour and 43-minute movie in about 2.5-3 hours with commercials. Home Alone is a 1990 comedy family film starring Macaulay Culkin, Joe Pesci, Daniel Stern, John Hurd, Catherine O'Hara. It's written by John Hughes, directed by Chris Columbus. Currently sits at a 7.7 out of 10 on IMDb. It's also the number 26 most popular movie right now on IMDb.
Wonder why.
It's the story of an 8-year-old troublemaker who must protect his house from a pair of burglars when he's accidentally left home alone by his family during Christmas vacation. It was nominated for 2 Oscars, Best Music Original Score for John Williams, and Best Music Original Score. Original Song and Original Score, yeah.
The GOAT, John Williams, at it again. Another banger.
He can't keep getting away with this.
He can. He can and he will. I was really shocked when you said 2 Oscars. And I was like, what the? For what? And then when you said John Williams, I went, no, all right, checks out.
No, that makes sense. You did leave an actor off of your starring list, I will say. There is another Culkin in the movie.
Oh, yeah, Kieran, his
brother. Kieran is in the movie. It panned to him at one point early on, and I was like, is that Kieran? I didn't know he was in this. And then, yeah, turns out it is. It is Kieran.
I also looked that up. I was like, wait, is that his brother? And then I looked it up. I was like, oh, yeah. Some may know him from, what is it, Secession? I think is like...
He's in Secession.
The most popular thing that he's in right now. But he's also Wallace, the gay roommate in Scott
Pilgrim. Yeah, I was going to say, Scott Pilgrim, he's in that one too. He's been in a lot more movies and shows in the like past decade or so.
Yeah. What... quick question, just because I went down a John Williams rabbit hole real hit right quick on the thing. What movies do you think John Williams won the Oscar for? He's won five.
Did he do Schindler's List?
That is one.
Yeah. I'm just trying to think of like Spielberg movies, I guess. I mean, I know he's done others, but. So Schindler's List is one. Did he do The Color Purple?
That did not.
E.T. maybe?
E.T.
Indiana Jones?
I don't know if any of those would have won. Maybe.
He did not win for that.
Wow.
Think of other stuff. Oh, Harry Potter? Really? Surprising, actually.
Yeah. Nominated.
Any of the Star Wars movies? I don't think so, right?
The original.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Would he have won for Superman?
He did not win for that.
Jesus. They're doing my man dirty.
I don't think he was even nominated for Superman.
Wow. That is a damn shame.
The best part about it.
Whoa.
All right.
Okay.
No, hold on. I don't want to give up yet. I think we can get it.
Do you want a hint?
Did he do Jurassic Park?
He did do Jurassic Park. He did not win for that.
All right. Are the remaining movies, are either of them or are both of them before the year 2000?
Both are.
Are they both Spielberg movies?
One is that I know of. Hold on one second and I will.
Did you Saving Private Ryan?
No. We've done one on the podcast.
Oh.
Jaws?
Yes.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense.
I'm like, Spielberg. I'm like, okay, this has to be.
All right. So I don't know the non-Spielberg movie, I guess.
And the last movie is a musical. Not, like, it's on Broadway musical.
Oh, so it's like he wrote music for a musical on Broadway, not a film?
No. It's a film. It was the screen adaptation of that.
Not Chicago, right? It's probably too late.
So it was a Broadway musical that...
Grease?
No.
A Broadway musical that then became a movie?
Yeah.
Oh, I feel like West Side Story has to be too early.
Was in 1971.
That's when he won it?
Yeah.
Footloose. Dirty Dancing.
Fiddler on the Roof.
Oh, all right. I would never have gotten that one.
Yeah, it's interesting because I feel like when you think of John Williams, you think of, I mean, obviously like Jaws, Star Wars, but like, I feel like Jurassic Park should be on there. I think of
Superman, the Superman theme was like
he wasn't even nominated for Jurassic Park.
Wow, that's surprising.
He was nominated for Harry Potter, but like they didn't win. I feel like he should have won for Harry Potter too. Like it's one of those movie scores that you hear and you're immediately boom. Yeah.
I wonder if maybe it's kind of like Michael Jordan in the MVP, right? Where it's just kind of voter fatigue. Like, yes, obviously he's the best, but...
That's why he's the GOAT!
We kind of need to give it to someone else or the award just gets boring.
Well, now it's called the Michael Jordan Award.
That's true, yeah.
Yeah, but do the Oscars call the Oscar for best... score? Do they call it the Williams? No,
they should.
Still
they
the should. Fucking Oscar.
When he dies, they should.
Okay. Here's the only issue with the NBA renaming. I mean, we'll get into Home Alone in a second, but the only issue with the NBA naming.
Hey, Michael Jordan's related to Home Alone. We can count it.
He is in the movie, as a cutout.
He is in the as a standee. Count it.
But like,
boom, lawyer.
The trophy just needs to be called like the Jordan Award or whatever. Like,
is it called the Michael Jordan Award?
Currently, but you know, it might like in time just be considered that. But it's like the Lombardi in football and stuff. You know, it's like it's so fine when it's.
Say the one thing that they might have an issue with just calling it the Jordan Award is the shoe branding.
Maybe.
I guess.
I don't know if that would cause an issue with.
Oh, easy. Just call it the Nike Jordan Award.
Well, then they then they chose a lot of the bad names, because then they, I think the like the most clutch player or something, I think is like Jerry West. This is going to be like the West Award. You're going to be like, huh, like, is it the best player in the West, or is it the Western Conference? Like,
cardinal direction, not great.
Had everyone seen Home Alone before?
Yeah.
You know, I'm pretty sure I have. I just don't remember watching, like, I don't remember sitting down and seeing all of it, like, start to finish. Like, I don't remember it being, like, a movie that I would just, like, sit down and watch. I feel like it's one of those movies that I've caught, like, here and there on TV, but not committed, like you said, 2.5-3 hours to an hour and 40 minute movie on TV.
It's definitely one that I've seen hell of a lot more since being with my wife. She loves Home Alone, makes me watch it every year at least once. Hell, even watching this in preparation for the podcast, we'd like been on YouTube TV, seen it on cable, like Home Alone 1 and 2 on like YouTube TV. I watched it for the podcast, and then immediately, like 2 days later at work, somebody had put it on the TV at work, and we were watching the Christmas movie, or like Home Alone, and I was like, damn, why am I like seeing this so much this Christmas season? I feel like it's come back. And I mean, maybe it's, I mean, it's only 22 years old at this point, or no, sorry, 32 years old. So I don't know, like, it's not like an anniversary or something, so I don't know why it's like getting so much publicity this Christmas. I feel like more than
others. I think it's getting to be the thing where people like our age and a little bit older than us, like, I just think it's something where they're gonna start showing the movies that we fondly remember as Christmas movies from childhood more than, you know, continuously showing. Yeah, I think they're not going to keep showing, like, White Christmas or... I mean, I'm sure you'll still see, like, It's a Wonderful Life, but... Hell, one of the channels does, like... What? Is it, like, 72 hours straight of A Christmas Story on TBS or something? Like, they show the movie start to finish for, like, three or four straight days. Like, they have no other movies in their catalog to show.
TBS or something, or TNT, one of those.
Yeah. So I mean,
I wonder if it's just that the like the station workers get to go on vacation for those days.
Oh, I'm sure,
because they just have
it. It's a big thing of like you just put it on a loop, and then yeah, whoever's, you get to go be with your family. But I do also think that more movies from our childhood will start to see. I'm surprised like the Santa Claus doesn't play more.
It does on, like, Freeform, I think, or, like, whatever the ABC Family equivalent is now.
Yeah.
I think they play it on Fox News a lot.
Here, you're welcome. You're welcome for saving that bit.
I'm kind of like you, Ben. I feel like before I really didn't watch this movie at all, like, I maybe have seen, like, a few things. And then see it a lot more now, like once a year. And it's all right. I was never like super strongly like one way or another on this one.
Yeah, I was never like big. It just wasn't something, I guess, like it wasn't something my brother or I were really like passionate about watching. Namely, I mean, it came out before either of us were born. Mm-hmm. But I also just think, like, I don't know how you guys were, but we didn't really pick
the movies a lot. It was like my mom and dad would pick movies that obviously they thought we would like. It wasn't like they were just like, oh, we're going to watch Gone with the Wind for 6 hours and you kids are going to love it. But like, I don't really think we watched Christmas movies a lot as a family at all.
No.
You know, I think when I got old enough, you know, Die Hard. No, hell, you want to throw Die Hard on? Fucking A, let's check. Where did it go?
Oh, I mean, yeah.
Fuck, we got all three, baby. Let's go. Oh my God. You know,
if we're gonna roll with that, but.
I mean, speaking of Die Hard, like, this movie feels about as Christmassy as Die Hard, if I'm being honest. Like, in retrospect, sitting down watching this movie, it's like, what ties to Christmas does this movie have? There's the Santa scene. He gets the tree.
They're all coming home for Christmas, though. And then, they all come home. Like, I don't know. I think there is a little bit more semblance of...
They're not coming home for Christmas. They were all going to visit the brother in France.
Well, I know, but they all got back by Christmas.
They could have been going to... No, it was the day after it was on... Or no, was it actually on Christmas morning?
I think it was Christmas Day.
Yeah.
That's it. Like, the plot of the movie doesn't... They don't do anything Christmassy, really. Doesn't centralize around it. Like, I'm thinking of, like... I'm like, I love Christmas Vacation. You know, they go and get the tree. They're, like, giving gifts. There's, like... There's Christmas things. They're having dinner. Like, here, it's... Much like Die Hard, it's set at Christmas time. Like... Why is he in LA? Oh, well, he's going to see his kid for Christmas. Like, you know, there's a Christmas party in there. And it's like, other than that, like, it's just kind of like a, you could set this movie any time of year. The babysitter doesn't show up or something. So the parents go out on a date and they leave Kevin home alone or something. He's got to survive the night from the burglars. You know, it's like, it could really be any time of year. It's not necessarily a Christmas movie in that sense.
Yeah, I would agree with that. You know, if that's... I think, once again, we've just gone through to prove the argument that Die Hard deserves its place.
On the all-time Christmas list.
As the top Christmas movie, you know? I mean, the proof is in the pudding.
That being said, I think I don't love Christmas movies. Like Ben, I didn't really grow up on them. So I'm like, I think a main draw of Christmas movies is the nostalgia factor for many of them. And I think for me to like get to that point where I'm like, oh, I'm very nostalgic, love this movie. It's really hard because like basically the only one we would really watch when I was growing up would be like maybe the Charlie Brown one and the Dr. Seuss Grinch like cartoon.
See, mine was always the, and I don't think we watched like Rudolph, Rankin and Bass, but and again, I think I have it here in my DVD case, somewhere. I have the whole little like collection of the movies. But like Santa Claus is Coming to Town. I remember watching that. I'm like, because they're only like 45 minutes. Like they were made for TV, so they're only an hour long. Like, I remember watching Santa Claus is Coming to Town a lot. And then I remember Rudolph later on. But I feel like I was watching Rudolph, like, that became, like, a tradition for something that I would put on while making, like, pastries or something. Like, that was like, oh, I'll just put this on. It feels Christmassy. And kind of go from there. But I don't remember ever watching it really with my mom and dad until I was old enough to make inappropriate jokes during the movie with my parents. And then my mom said she'll never watch it with my dad and I again. but yeah, I mean, I don't remember. And like I said, it could be something where we did it and I just didn't have strong memories about it. But yeah, it was never like a big, like, oh, we're gonna, you know, sit down and watch these Christmas movies and this is what we're gonna do. So... You know, it's something I want to do with Grayson now is just be like, hey, we're going to watch, we're going to watch Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer and, you know, one night a week or something, we'll watch a Christmas movie, and that'll be like on Friday night or something. That'll be like your treat to stay up past bedtime. We'll watch a Christmas movie or something. But yeah, I just don't remember that being a thing.
Yeah, we did some of the claymation movies. Like the old, really old ones.
Yeah.
But other than that, I don't think we watched much. Like, I didn't see Christmas Story until I was, like, almost an adult, if not an adult. Saw Home Alone. Elf was one I think I watched. But again, like, I watched that more so when I was, like, a teenager, I guess.
Yeah, well, I feel like Elf is more, like, our generation's. Because it came out, what, 04-ish?
Something like that.
Like, it's very much when we were kids. Which I don't think I saw Elf until I was at college.
Dude, same.
Wow.
Same. Yeah.
I think I definitely saw it when I was in high school, at least.
A group of people were like, you've never seen it? And I was like, nope, and I really don't care if I do or not. Oh, God, we have to watch it right now. I was like, all right. It's okay. And they're like, what?
I think it's a great movie. I think it's very good.
I think you think it's a great movie because...
No, it is actually a great movie. It's not just because of nostalgia. It is actually funny. I think it's actually funny.
Take off your rose-tinted glasses for a second, Cam.
No, I mean, I think it's actually good. Time for a rewatch. I just watched it last year. I haven't seen it this year yet, but... Or maybe we did? No, we didn't. Not yet. Like I said, I think it's actually good. But I do agree. I think it's hard for Christmas movies to actually be, like, good movies. Like, it's just so... There's something so cliche about the whole concept in general. It's hard to escape that. And that's why the best Christmas movie is actually A Violent Night that just came out in theaters this year.
Okay, but did you see A Violent Night?
I did see it, yeah.
Dude.
It was good. It's a good movie.
Not gonna lie.
It was a fun movie.
I enjoyed that movie much more than I thought I would.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Yeah.
I was like, all right, I'm going to enjoy just, you know, the violence of it and whatever. And then the movie ended and I was like, that was surprisingly good. Like, I surprisingly enjoyed that more.
Yeah, it was like, I don't know, David Harbour was just so good as this disgruntled Santa Claus. And,
It's basically just the fucking I think you should leave bit as a movie, right?
Like, well, no, kind of. Well, the I think you should leave bit is Santa trying to be an actor, right?
Oh, yeah. Okay. All right.
And this is like Santa is real. And also he basically gets stuck at this place and has to save this family. Yeah. And I won't say anything else because it's a really entertaining movie. It's really fun. And they like, it's funny because they, what I was saying before about the cliche-ness of Christmas movies, they include a lot of the Christmas movie tropes in the movie, but it's like this.
In a well done way.
It's bloody action movie. So it's really funny to see like, oh, they got back together, like, you know, throughout this like bloody mess of a movie. It's worth a watch. I don't know if you should watch it since you got to pay like $30 to go see it near you, but it'll be worth a watch when it comes out to stream eventually.
I don't know. I feel like this movie will hit really well if you are a kid, because I feel like it being kind of told through the lens of Kevin is a lot more kind of like, oh, wow, like what would I do if I was home alone? Like, oh, my goodness, because he's like, you know, he's trying to do the aftershave and stuff and like burning his face, or he's going to grocery shop and do all this stuff. And I feel like this movie leans a little younger. I have a question for you guys. I feel like, do you think this movie would make sense today, like happening?
No.
Because I feel like, especially with like the way TSA is run, I'm like, there's no way they could just...
Oh, I mean, absolutely not there, with that.
We sat there going like, how did they not scan the tickets and realize they had an extra ticket?
Well, they accidentally threw out Kevin's ticket.
That's true. They do throw it out in the garbage.
So they did throw it out, but there's no way with TSA you're sitting there, because you literally can't run through security anymore. Like, you literally just can't.
No.
So it's not possible. I don't know. I mean, it wouldn't make any sense.
Well, they would also be like, on the loudspeakers, be like, Kevin McAllister? Kevin McAllister? And he'd be like, oh, shit. Where is he?
Yeah. So I don't think that's realistic. I mean, I imagine even at the time it was a little far-fetched, but.
Yeah, but the magic of a pre-9/11 world where airports were just like, yeah, okay, go ahead. Like, I feel like there wasn't really much of, and I don't know, I knew I had flown pre-9/11, but I don't remember much about it, but I feel like it was just kind of like very free-for-all-esque, where it was just like, yeah, okay, walk through, okay, here you go.
Like, I imagine it's like if you went to the bus station nowadays, I feel like that's how it would kind of be, or like a train station, because you don't really have to go through security on a train, do you? I assume you'd probably have to like at least a metal detector. I don't know, Cam. I think you're the only one who's actually gone on like a train for some distance.
Oh, you don't go on a metal detector.
You don't do anything. You literally just pull up with the bag.
Yeah, you just pull up with a bag and walk on the train. They don't even give you. They don't even take your ticket immediately. The conductor comes through, like halfway through. Yeah, I mean the train's on tracks. It's not going anywhere, except for on the tracks.
I've seen a lot of derailing news.
Yes, but there's nothing you can really do as a passenger that's gonna fuck that up. You know, like if it goes off the rails, that's like a whole other mechanical issue.
Just like this podcast, fun fact,
you usually have to be outside of the train in order to cause those things to happen. Probably. Have you ever seen any bandit movies where they derail trains? All right, they're never in the train when it derails. They're outside.
They're pulling the switch so we can fuck the train up
and hopefully survive the crash.
I literally just said this the other day on fucking when I was talking about the Pokemon game. I'm like, why does every supervillain in something is like, I'm going to bring about the onslaught, the end of the world. And then it's like, dude, you are part of the world.
They've crafted the plan, so they know how to survive it. And that way any other survivors will have to bow to them like the peasants they will be. Think about the fact that really pre-9/11, you didn't have to even have a ticket to go to the gate.
Right. Yeah.
So, I mean, for them to just, like, rush through the security to get to the gate to board, like, yeah, they probably just threw the bags, whatever, and went. Like, I still don't understand how that entire time no one realized they were a person short. Like.
Right. Like, even with 12 kids, you'd be like, hey, I haven't seen Kevin in a while. What do you guys think? Where is Kevin?
Or you would think you would count him as they're getting on the plane, right? Okay.
Well, the one girl count when they got on the bus.
Well, and then they also when they got away too, because the parents went into first class and all the kids got sent into the.
But they all still had to board the plane.
I mean, I think it's silly too, but yeah, I don't know. I mean, obviously, like, it's all far fetched.
Look, you have to substitute your sense of reality. You know,
you really have to.
That's the other my other favorite meme that comes from this movie is like, if any of the things that Kevin did to these guys happened in real life, they'd be dead.
Yeah, so I actually did want to bring that up because I have a list here of things that he did and then medical doctors' opinions on what those things would cost.
Oh God.
So I think what would be fun is if I describe what the thing is, and then what you guys think like would be the worst outcome from that, you know, and then I'll tell you what the doctor said. All right. So
okay.
This is according to some Medium article, so don't come at me. All right. So the first thing they have listed here is Marv falls down the concrete steps. So this is where like he's going to the basement and it's all icy and he slips on it and falls down. Now, what do you guys think? You guys think you're surviving that? You guys think you're not too bad? Just a little bruised?
Yeah. I think it's bruised tailbone.
Are we talking worst case scenario or it's like concrete. Just in general?
It's sliding down concrete steps.
Yeah, bruised tailbone.
I think you're definitely possibly breaking a coccyx for sure.
All right, so this guy...
That's best case scenario. Worst case scenario, you hit the back of your head on one of those steps and crack your skull, and you bleed out. You're done.
Yeah, so this ER physician said, you don't get up from a fall like that. Busted ribs, pulmonary contusion, splenic laceration, kidney injuries. Doctor predicted the results would be peeing and pooping from bags, pushed around in wheelchairs in some sort of chronic care facility.
Oh my god.
Why do we have to emphasize the pooping in bags part? Why is that like the thing we, you know, we really got to make sure we let these people know is that they will be pooping in bags.
Don't fall down the stairs. You will be pooping from a bag.
Yeah, that's pretty rough. That might be a little extreme, but
okay, so these are worst case scenario.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's worst case or like real. I'd say it's realistic to worst case scenario. Yeah, it's so, never best case scenario. Best case scenario is you bounce up like nothing happened in the movie.
Well, I think realistic is like you're definitely breaking something.
Yeah, I think something's getting fractured.
But I don't think you're necessarily like having like a with ice. Fucking embolism or anything.
You're not pooping and peeing in bags.
Yeah, I don't think you're shit in a bag the rest of your
Well, hold on. Life. It's going to get worse. So, all right. The next one is that is Harry. This isn't the paint can one. We'll get there. This is Harry grips a red hot doorknob. So he heats up the doorknob with the blowtorch. What do you guys think? You guys think that's good? Or you think you're surviving that?
His skin is not coming off. His skin is
no, he got off easy in the movie.
Yeah, it was basically a brand. Like he was slightly branded. If he grabs that thing legitimately, like again, his skin is sticking on that thing.
I think that's actually pretty close. So this says that if the doorknob is glowing visibly red in the dark, it has been heated to 751 degrees Fahrenheit. And Harry gives it a nice strong 1-2 second grip. By comparison, 1 second of contact with 155 degree water is enough to cause third degree burns. The temperature of the doorknob is not quite hot enough to cause Harry's hand to burst into flames, but it's not far. Then this person says, we're going to need to, like, remove parts of his skin with this thing that looks like a cheese cutter. And then they're going to need to graft it onto his hand. So, you're right, Ben. I think it's full-on skin grafts for this guy after just the doorknob grab.
Yeah.
But that hasn't deterred them yet. The next one is also fire-related. So, this is when Harry stands under the blowtorch when he goes into the door and lights his head on fire. What do you think? You think that's good? You patting it out with some snow?
No.
Well, seeing as it literally sizzled when he put his... It was supposed to sizzle when he put his head in the snow...
I mean, he's under that flamethrower for a hot second.
Yeah, that's not like a quick boost.
So,
I mean, his beanie's melted to his...
That's definitely a skin graft. They're definitely de-skinning his ass, and he is then going to be literally...
He's got a whole cheek. A whole cheek just places right on, like a skin cap.
This what is likely a simple... Or what was likely a simple second-degree skin burn is now a full-thickness burn, likely to cause necrosis of the calvarium, the skull bone. So it's going to burn the bone, adding that he will probably now need to have the top of his skull replaced as a result. God.
What the fuck? Why is this so morbid? This is like, what was that old show, A Thousand Ways to Die or whatever?
Well, because as you guys said, they point out that instead of backing out, he stands under it for like 7 seconds before leaving with his head on fire.
He's under there a long time. Like
enough to like realize that he's on fire and then be like, ah, and then like run out.
You'd think the I'm on fire would come pretty freaking quick, right? Like, oh shit, I'm on fire right now.
But for comedic effect, he has to stand there for like 5 seconds.
Well, I mean, yeah, obviously.
Everyone has to realize that he's on fire later. Like,
yeah, and it's a kid's movie, so you know they're going to take some time to realize what's going on.
Does it talk about the iron that he drops on the dude's face?
It doesn't talk about the iron, actually.
That one would have probably killed him.
Yeah. Well, the paint can may... So the paint can's next on this list. Which I think Mythbusters also did an episode on this. But say they both each take roughly a 2 kilonewton hit to the face, easily enough to fracture multiple facial bones, and it's probably going to knock you out cold. Also, if you get a bleed in there, and especially a fast bleed, it pushes onto the brain so that it stops functioning, and that leads to death. So, best case, you're breaking some bones in your face, and worst case, you're getting an internal brain bleed, and you're dying.
Man.
Then the final one is Marv hits Harry with a crowbar a lot, and that's not as bad as the others, but they say that your sternum is probably going to be cracked from that. And
yeah,
you could break some ribs and bleed to death.
Yeah, I forgot that then he gets up and just like starts swinging the crowbar again. It's like, all right. Seems a little absurd that your response is let me beat the shit out of this guy with a crowbar now. And two, that like you just bounced up. Like, okay. Well, that hurt, yeah, but
some things the article doesn't like it mentions my name but doesn't cover, like with the doctors, is Marv steps on a nail. He also walks barefoot over broken glass.
That was
the
one.
He gets hit in the face with the iron.
The broken glass one was the one where I was like, yeah, nope, I'm out. I'm out right there. That's it. That's the diehard thing where it's like, nope.
Yeah. Kevin shot Marv and Harry in the face and groin with a BB gun. And then finally, to top it all off, his neighbor hits them with an aluminum shovel over the head. And that's not even like, the worst one.
Which is what's so insane to me is that's the one that like knocks them unconscious after all the other shit where they're just like, yeah, okay.
Right, not the
paint cans. I feel like the BB gun and stuff is like one of the easiest ones. Yeah. And then it's except it is point blank in the face.
It is like right, he could have literally put it into their eyeball and like done some serious damage. Like, very, very easily. So, it's just so insane how he tries to kill them repeatedly.
Well, what's crazy to me, too, is the fact that, like...
And they keep going.
Again, you have to suspend belief for this movie to make sense. Because, like...
Yeah.
Let's be honest. There's no way that those guys, if they survive any of this, are just like, yeah... We'll keep bumbling along. Like, no, we're not just going to immediately find a way to absolutely murder this child. Like, nope. No, we're going to keep playing your silly game, kid. Like, either they'd leave the house or they would come back. Let's be honest. This is America. They'd have access to a gun.
Yeah.
I forgot one that... Oh my god, now I'm blanking on the actress's name. The mom.
Catherine O'Hara.
I forgot that she was in this. You know, and again, it's one of those movies that, like, I remembered parts of it. And I remembered John Candy, but I didn't remember, like, his whole shtick of the thing, and which felt just like... We need to fill time. So like, hey, John, what are you doing? Do you want to maybe do this? Like, do you want to come in and shoot for like a day and we'll just call it?
I believe he ad-libbed all of his lines for the film.
I'd believe it.
Based on his lines, I wouldn't be too surprised.
the king of polka or whatever his thing was.
Yeah. No, I, like I said, I remembered him being in it, but it felt like it was definitely just a favor to John Hughes that he did that movie.
Guess I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, he was only in it for all of a couple minutes, right?
Like I said, I guarantee they probably shot all of his scenes in like a day. Maybe two. Like one day at the airport, one day in like the van.
Yeah.
It felt like them breaking into the house in that felt like so much more of the movie in my mind than what it was. Like, in my head, like, that's, like, a vast majority of the movie, and in reality, it's only, like, what, 20 minutes of it?
Yeah, it's like the last 15, 20 minutes. Yeah.
A lot of the rest of it's kind of boring, if I'm being honest.
Yeah.
No, like, it's just him living it up in his house and going to stores and stuff, and it's not that funny. Like, it's okay.
I would have loved to have been on the set at the times that, like, Macaulay Culkin wasn't there, and then when Macaulay Culkin would get there, just to see Joe Pesci's, like, complete personality switch.
Well, he said he avoided him. It says he avoided Macaulay Culkin at all he could, so he would think he was mean.
Well, not only that, but also the fact that Macaulay Culkin's a child and Joe Pesci has the mouth of a sailor.
Yeah. Well, that's what
every other word out of the man's mouth is an F-bomb. So I think, didn't they said they did like a swear jar or something that they kept for him or something?
I didn't see that, but I saw that, like, I guess, you know, every movie he's pretty much done has a lot of swearing. So it said that, like, Chris Columbus was like, use the word fridge instead of the F word. Or then, like, when he's, like, just, like, incoherently mumbling, that's, like, him trying not to curse.
Yeah.
This does say, John Candy filmed his part in only one day, albeit a 23-hour day.
Oh.
Almost all of his dialogue was improvised. His part was potentially partly inspired by the character he played in Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
That makes sense. It's very similar.
It checks out. And it doesn't surprise me, too, that he ad-libbed a lot of it, because I want to say Catherine O'Hara came from a big, like, I want to say...
They were on the same SCTV.
Yeah, I was going to say SCTV. It was her. Candy was there. And wasn't Jim's dad? God, I'm blanking
Eugene
on names.
Eugene Levy?
Eugene Levy was in it, too. Yeah, they were all in, like, the same kind of, like, improv troupe. So that
Joe Flattery was there, Harold Ramis.
Yep.
Rick Moranis. It's funny to me that, like, I feel like everyone is like, Home Alone, you know, Merry Christmas, you filthy animal. And it's like, that's not from this first one. That's actually, like, a later thing from the second one that I feel like most people attribute to the first one.
Well, that's when he started watching it. I'm like, wait a minute. He doesn't say Merry Christmas, you filthy animal. So he says, keep the change.
Yeah.
And I was like, wait a minute. Is that not this movie? Is that a different? And then I was like, it must be the second one.
No. And it's so... I'm not going to slide him. You know, make your money. But, like, Home Alone 2, Hannah and I were kind of talking about this. It literally follows, like, essentially the same.
Oh, it's the same plot points, yeah.
Formula. It's the exact, like, same thing. There's the homeless lady with the pigeons. Then there's the you know, the guy next door who he's like Kevin's afraid of, but in the end he actually, like, helps and saves them or whatever. And they have, like, this heartwarming talk. There's the setting the traps and where, you know, it's like,
yeah,
it's like, all right, let's take this same exact movie, change a couple things, and put him in New York instead. Even the fucking Wet Bandits make it to New York. Like, from Chicago.
How do they explain that? Shouldn't they be in jail?
I don't remember. The next morning, the family oversleeps and must rush to the airport. Kevin is with them, but he becomes separated from them while carrying Peter's bags and accidentally boards a flight to New York City. Upon arrival, he decides to tour the city, but becomes frightened by a homeless woman tending to pigeons in Central Park. He uses Peter's credit card to check in at the Plaza Hotel, not knowing that the Wet Bandits have also reached the city after escaping from prison.
Oh, they escaped.
Somehow are smart enough to escape from prison.
Yeah.
Oh, man. The 90s, right, guys? What a time.
Well, I love the bit in the first one when, like, you find out, like, why they're called the Wet Bandits or whatever. And Joe Pesci's just like... You're a sicko. Like, why would you do that?
You're a sick man, Marv.
Yeah, and he's like, all the great ones have a calling card.
I feel like you don't appreciate that as enough as a kid. As an adult with a house, that's fucked up. It is fucked up to
honestly,
leave the water running.
Honestly,
that is fucked.
I'd be more pissed about my house being ruined by water damage
than the
fact
stolen
that you
stuff.
Stole shit.
Yeah.
Wait, does he back it up? I forget.
Yeah, he stuffs, like, washcloths in that over the drains and then...
And then runs then the water? Oh, I thought he just, like...
No,
well, that's why...
Because if you see at the end, because Kevin runs across the house across the street, when he's running through the house, it's like the basement's full of water.
Yeah. Dude, that's fucked up. I'd be, like you said, I'd be more mad about that than the actual burglary.
I thought they just like let the water run and the water bill was super high, but no, that's kind of fucked.
No. Yeah. I mean, that would piss me off too. It'd be like, what the fuck?
I'd also be pissed at the fact that I have to pay a water bill for someone to fuck my house up.
Yeah. it's messed up pretty bad.
Everyone here had seen Home Alone before, whether that was Ben's spotty remembering of the movie. So you'll get a original review based off nostalgia, and you'll get an updated one on our most recent viewing. Cam.
All right. I gave this movie originally, when going into it, a 7. I'm going to turn it down a little bit to a 6. I think it's a fine movie as it is. It's fun enough, but it's longer than it should be. The action parts are shorter than they should be. And a lot of the other parts are just kind of a little boring, I think. And similar to what you said, I don't really have nostalgia for this movie in general. So that's what I'm going to leave it. It's fun at times, and there are some funny moments, but overall it's very okay. There's at least a handful of movies I'd rather watch than this one, I think. But it is, I mean, that said, it is still like one of the most iconic Christmas movies of the 90s and 2000s even. So
yeah, going in, like I said, kind of spotty memory of this movie. I only had it at like a 6. Like, I don't remember ever like thinking it was, you know, the bee's knees, if you would.
Ben's definitely 90 years old.
After rewatching it, I dropped it down to like a 4. Honestly, it's lower than mid-tier in terms of Christmas movies to me. Like, I think this movie is, like, in a couple years, I think my son will really enjoy this movie. Like, when he's, like, in the 4 to 8-year-old range, where it's, like, you can kind of picture yourself as Kevin and, like, imagine what it would be like to be home alone, and it's easier to suspend your disbelief of things that would happen. But, like, I don't know, as an adult, I'm just like, God, there's a lot of bullshit to sit through to get to what most people think of this movie. Like, I feel like people's memory of this movie is the last like 15 minutes, and they forget that you have to sit through an hour and a half to get there. I in terms of Christmas movies, I think it's near the bottom of the list, especially as an adult who finds it harder to suspend disbelief. Mind you, I'm a grown man who loves watching people in capes fly around and fight bad guys, but I don't know, man. An eight-year-old kid fighting off... fighting off two grown adult burglars, to me, somehow is hard. It's hard for me to be like, oh, okay, that'll happen. I think there's better Christmas movies out there, and I think most of the ones we've done for the podcast, I would rank ahead of this one.
I thought I was going to have the hot take with my 5 out of 10 going in, but Ben saying it's lower than mid tier was pretty high. Going to offend
That's
a
pretty
lot
hot.
Of people.
I do
out
think
there.
A 4 is a tad low. I don't know. I think it's pretty low.
So going in, I had it at a 5 out of 10. It gets a boost for me for the John Williams score and just the soundtrack in general. The Chuck Berry, like, Run, Rudolph, Run, or whatever. I don't know the actual. Run, Rudolph. I don't know the title. I don't know the title of the song, but
it's, that actually, song. Actually, it's Run, Rudolph, Run. You're right.
Ah, see? Fuck you, Cam. That song, goated, slaps. Anytime that comes on, I'll jam out. Not even a big Christmas music fan, but I think John Candy's bit, while funny, serves really no purpose. And honestly, to me, one of the funniest bits at the end of the movie is the fact that, like, Kevin's there, the mom comes home, and then immediately after, everyone else shows up. And it was like, well, you just spent, you know, a whole day driving with the Kenosha Kickers to get from fucking Scranton to Chicago, and You know, you could have been here the same time if you would have just waited for the flight. Like you guys said, I think a lot of the movie could probably be taken out and just get us to the good parts, you know? Like, give me what we want. We want the Wet Bandits versus Kevin, you know? I'm going to leave it there at a 5 out of 10. I think it's all right. I think it's, I will say, I think it's one of the better Christmas movies. Because I just don't like them that much. But we hope, we hope you know, send all your direct messages to Ben to roast him for his.
Boo this bold, man!
Bold imagine, take if, on Home Alone. Imagine if Die Hard, right, spent an hour building up to everything at Nakatomi Plaza and then spent 15 minutes at Nakatomi Plaza and everyone still remembered Nakatomi Plaza and was like, no, this movie's fantastic, bro. Bullshit.
No, that's a good point, because, like, they only spend, like, 15 minutes on him and his relationship with his wife, and that tells you all you need to know, you know? And then they get straight into the action.
Like, I'm sorry, but...
Straight into the Hans Gruber.
Come on.
Hans. Yeah, send all your hate mail to Ben.
Yeah.
Directly.
Hey, and if you don't want share spice, us. If you don't want the spice,
share us don't look for the with hot your take. Friends and...
Wow.
Share us with your friends and family. Give us a review. Check out the show notes. Make yourself a South Bend Shovel Slayer. Hit up the Drizzly and Casker links and check us out next time. And as always, watch responsibly.